Hey everyone, in today's episode, I'm going to cover the case of Sasha Samsudeen, a young woman who was senselessly murdered by someone who is typically thought of as helping others and not hurting them. Then we'll delve into the trial of the person accused of this heinous crime and see if justice is served. This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 43. On Friday night, October 16th, 2015, Julia Goff and her roommate, Haley Messmore, went to a local bar in Orlando, Florida, for a few drinks. Shortly after midnight, when they were done at the bars and ready to head home, Haley used her phone to summon an Uber. While Haley was using the app to arrange for their ride, Julia noticed a young, dark-haired woman about a block in front of them, stumbling and looking as though she was intoxicated. The woman was walking alone, and Julia watched as a car full of several men pulled up alongside of her and started calling out to her. It made Julia really uncomfortable, and so she decided to intervene. She ran up to the woman and introduced herself, asking where the woman's friends were and telling her that she was worried about her being by herself. The woman was really friendly, Julia thought, and linked arms with her, saying that her name was Sasha and that she was trying to get home. Julia told her that she and her roommate were about to catch an Uber, but that they would be happy to take Sasha home first if she wanted. Sasha wasn't able to tell her where she lived, so Julia told her where they lived, and Sasha said that, yeah, she lived there too. Here's Julia describing their encounter.
At that point, I asked her, "Do you? Are you sure? Did you just move in? I've never met you before," things like that. But she was sure.
Now, during your conversation with her up to this point, are you seeing any more signs that might lead one to conclude she was impaired by something?
I mean, she definitely seemed overserved. I would say, again, just very affectionate with me, like, "Thank you, I love you, thank you so much." Still holding on to my arm. She was so friendly. And just very eager to, like, get home.
The Uber picked them up and then dropped them off at Julia and Haley's apartment building, just north of downtown Orlando. Sasha leaned over and kissed the Uber driver before jumping out of the car. She then ran across the intersection to an apartment building across the street called Uptown Place Apartments, so Julia and Haley followed her. Sasha went to a locked entrance and immediately began typing into the keypad, but she seemed to be having trouble remembering her code. Julia asked if she had her key or if she could help call anyone. She held her purse while Sasha looked for her key and for her cell phone, but they weren't in there. A security guard for the building approached them as they were standing outside. They asked him to help Sasha get into the building, and he told them that he couldn't. She didn't have an ID or a key that showed that she was a resident. They asked if he would at least let Sasha sleep in the lobby, but he told them that he couldn't do that either. They debated calling the police, but the guard told them that the police wouldn't respond to something like that. As they stood there trying to figure out what to do, another male approached and used his key fob to open the door to the building. Sasha ran inside behind the man as the door was open. And so after thanking the guard for his help, even though they were just doing it to be polite, the guard hadn't really helped them at all, Julia and Haley left, believing that Sasha was now safely inside of her building. The following afternoon, Sasha's friend, Anthony Roper, was getting worried that he hadn't yet heard from her. He had gone out with her the night before, until Sasha had decided to leave the bar and go home around 12:30. They would typically get together at Chick-fil-A on Saturday mornings to talk about the night before, but this time, he couldn't get a hold of her. He called some of her other friends, and together, they decided to go to Sasha's apartment. They followed another tenant into the parking garage and saw Sasha's car. They were able to get inside the apartment building, and they knocked on her door. It was about 7:30 p.m. at this point. There was no response, so Anthony called the Orlando Police Department. The police arrived, and as the friends were explaining to them that they weren't able to get a hold of their friend, a man dressed in plain clothes came over and asked what was going on and how he could help. He identified himself as Stephen Duxbury and said that he was the security guard at Uptown Place. Anthony told him that they couldn't find his friend, and to his surprise, Stephen relayed how he had encountered her the night before, but said that he never saw her again after that. They were finally able to get a hold of the owner of Sasha's apartment, and they got the code to open the door. Anthony and the two other friends went downstairs as the police went inside to investigate. When officers entered Sasha's apartment, they saw no signs of any kind of struggle and no signs of forced entry. They walked through the apartment, searching for Sasha, in the living room and then in the bedroom. They walked through the bedroom into the bathroom, where they noticed that the cabinets were open and the toilet lid was up, but no Sasha. As they were walking back through the bedroom, they stopped. They could see hair sticking out of a comforter on the bed. It was Sasha, her left arm pinned behind her back, her bra and purple shirt torn open, wearing no pants or underwear. It appeared as though she had been hit in the head several times and that she had been strangled. Sasha Sam Sedin was born on July 4, 1988 in New York City to Tara and Ken Sam Sedin. She graduated from the University of Florida in 2010, and at the time of her death, she was just 27 years old, a young professional who worked for Pearson, an educational services firm managing their social media accounts. She was also a volunteer with the Apartment Association of Greater Orlando and appeared in several YouTube videos for 407 Apartments TV.
Hi, I'm Sasha with 407 Apartments TV. I'm here at the Edge Orlando Apartments near UCF. So let's go check out.
But now, investigators had to figure out who would murder the bright personality on those YouTube videos. The popular 27-year-old with a good career and loving family. A few hours after Sasha's body was discovered, around 11:45 p.m., Detective Toyd Montford responded to the scene. He did a walkthrough of Sasha's apartment and took recorded statements from Anthony and his friends, along with the security guard, Stephen Duxbury. He was floored after talking to Stephen, because he thought it was the best account yet of what could have possibly happened to Sasha. Stephen told him that at approximately 2 o'clock in the morning, he encountered three females at the entrance of the apartment building. Two of the girls told him that they were concerned about the third girl. He said she appeared to be very intoxicated, was stumbling, and was hyper-focused on trying to use the building's call box to let herself in. He told Detective Montford that there were two ways to get into the building, by using a key fob, which the girl didn't have with her, or by using the call box. The problem with her trying to use the call box is that the call box would then ring to her cell phone, which she didn't have on her either. Here's Stephen describing to Detective Montford what happened next.
So what happens next?
She was still kind of fumbling around with the call box while I was talking to two ladies, and another gentleman came up, kind of jokingly made a comment like, "You're not all robbers, are you?" And I'm standing there in uniform, and I certainly hope not if I'm standing here. And he just kind of chuckled and buzzed himself in, and she went in after him through the door. I was talking with two ladies still at the time. As soon as I finished up with them, I went into the building to try and find where she was.
How long did you talk with the two ladies?
After she went in?
Yes.
I'd say maybe another 2-3 minutes tops.
Okay.
It wasn't very long, because once I realized she'd gone into the building, I'm like, okay, you ladies kind of stopped becoming a priority, and now I got to find out where this lady's going.
Okay. So you go into the building, and what happened next?
And I started sweeping floor by floor to find where she was, and eventually I was able to locate her because she was stumbling around, crashing into the wall. Her footfalls were just slap, 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 slap. And she was just kind of wandering around aimlessly. At one point, she was at the front end of the building, and her apartment, which was 345, is actually on the other side of the building. I think she was confused as to which side of the building she was on.
Okay.
Eventually, she did make it to her apartment, and she was trying to use the digital key number on it to get into it, but I don't know if she was inputting the wrong code or something, but it wasn't working. At which point, she thought maybe she left her keys at her car, so she asked me if I would walk with her out to the parking garage so she could try and get the keys out of her car. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, if it's in the car, it's probably locked. I don't see how that's what, but whatever. So I walked with her, and we went out, and we didn't even go to any car because about maybe five steps out, she's like, wait, I think I remember the code now. And then I'm like, okay, so we go back in. I then bring her back to the thing. She starts trying to punch in codes again, still not working. At this point, I'm like, I have to do, you know, I got to keep doing my job and got to do another sweep. So I'm like, okay, you stay here and keep trying to do this. I'm going to go do another sweep. And if I come back and you're still not in your apartment, we're going to have to figure out how to deal with the situation. Okay. When I came back, she wasn't there. And I did another sweep of the entire building, no sign of her.
When you say you did a sweep, can you be a little more specific?
I walk each floor.
So you left her to go walk each floor, and then at some point you come back.
Yeah, actually, I didn't really do a full sweep. I just did a partial and just to go check on it because I didn't really want to leave her there for too long by herself.
So about how long did it take before you returned back?
I want to say maybe 15, 20 minutes tops.
Okay. And when you returned back, was she still at the door?
Nope, she was no longer there. I figured, okay, she must have gotten in, and I continued on with my duties.
Steven said he typically kept a log of the floor sweeps he does, but that he didn't document that one. He then said he thought he saw Sasha again at some point later that morning, this time in the hallway with a guy.
I think I saw her again at some point later on in the evening. Again, I didn't really document it because I wasn't sure, and there was nothing suspicious about what she and the gentleman I saw her with were doing. They were just walking in the hallway.
Third floor?
I think it was the third floor. I'm not 100% sure. Again, I was doing my sweeps and I was just walking around. Okay. I usually only document when I find situations. Otherwise, it'll just show start a patrol, end a patrol with no incidents if nothing happens.
Are you sure it was her?
Not 100% sure because it looked like she might have been wearing something different. I couldn't tell you what, though. Because, again, they weren't really doing anything out of the ordinary that I see most people when they're walking around, but it did look similar to her.
Okay.
With the hair and the height and the skin color.
Okay. Can you describe that guy?
Vaguely. I mean, Caucasian male, average build, either brown or sandy hair, and was wearing a polo and some slacks.
Have you ever seen him here before?
No. I mean, there are still a lot of residents here that I don't really see on a normal enough basis that I would really recognize them. Usually the only ones I really see are the ones that either work nights or they come in late at night.
Did you ever go inside apartment 345?
I'm not supposed to go into apartments.
Okay. But did you go?
No.
No. Okay. Have you ever been in apartment 345?
No.
No. Did you see anyone going to apartment 345?
No.
Yes, no. So after possibly seeing her with this guy you just described, did you ever see her again?
No.
Steven said he continued to work his shift and do floor sweeps and walk the premises until his shift ended at 6 a.m. But he said he didn't leave the building until about 6:30 because he was still writing his report. Detective Montford pressed him on why he left Sasha there, outside of her apartment door, drunk and disoriented.
So when you were at the apartment with this young lady at apartment 345, and she's trying to put the code in, the second time, what was the pressing issue? I just want to make sure I understand. What was the pressing issue for you to go finish or do this sweep? Like, I guess I'm trying to say, like, she's kind of like the issue right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, I can see where you're going with that, because it's like I really should have just stayed with her instead of going and doing my patrol, but I just figured, well, you know, she's drunk, she just can't remember her code, you know, go do a sweep, come back, and if she hasn't figured it out by then, you know, I'll have to either call you guys, the cops, have her removed because I can't verify who she is or anything like that, or got to figure out something because she can't stay in the hallways.
Well, that's what I'm saying. She's in the hallway, and she's really not supposed to be in the hallway, right? Rather, if you're ready, correct?
Yeah. And
she's disoriented. She's intoxicated, and she's trying to put the code in, which is already the second time now. And you felt it was prudent to go do a rest of the sweep and then come back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you knock on the door?
No, I didn't.
How come?
I just figured that, one, if she had gotten in, she probably was already asleep or passed out or something like that, and she wasn't going to answer the door anyway.
Okay.
And I, for the most part, I don't really make a habit of knocking on residents' doors unless there is a problem, because I don't want anyone to accuse me of harassing them. I've had some of the residents who I've had problems with before say that they're going to go report me to the main office for harassment. It's like,
yeah, you're doing your job, exactly. I can understand.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure you guys have to deal with that all the time, worse than I do.
There is something about Stephen that raised the suspicion of investigators. Not only was he possibly the last person who had seen her alive, but he had what looked like bruises on his hand and up and down his arms. As part of his investigation, Detective Montford reviewed surveillance video from the apartment building and was a bit surprised at what he saw. There was Sasha, smiling and stumbling through the building, with Stephen occasionally following behind her. The two walked around like this for almost an hour. Then, at 5 a.m., you can see Stephen walking out to the parking garage alone, and then walking back inside on a different floor. Then, at about 6:30 a.m., Stephen can be seen taking trash bags out to the garage, something Detective Montford thought was unusual. The trash bags also appeared to be the same type of trash bags that he had seen in Sasha's apartment. But the next day, on October 19th, something else would happen that would make Stephen an even more likely suspect. A preliminary match was made on a fingerprint that had been found on Sasha's toilet lid. It matched Stephen. So needless to say, detectives wanted to talk to him again. A few days later, on October 22nd, Detective Montford asked Stephen to come to the station for another interview. This time, Detective Brian Ferreira did the majority of the interviewing. When describing what he did at 6 a.m., after he was officially off duty, Stephen said he had found some trash on the second floor, and so he had taken it out on his way out. He said he usually finds trash and takes it out, that it was nothing unusual. Detective Ferreira questioned why he didn't record taking the trash out in his log, as he normally would do, and Stephen dismissed it, saying that he just didn't record it, while admitting that it didn't look good. Stephen also described, in a bit more detail, the next time he saw Sasha, later, with that other guy.
So you saw him in the hallway. Do you remember where you were when you saw them?
I was coming from where this elevator is, and I was walking that way. I was going down, like, as if I was going around.
And how were they, when you saw them, where were they going?
They were just walking, you know, they were, like, kind of walking towards me, and I was walking past them.
So you're face-to-face, they were walking towards you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they were kind of like, you know, kind of huddled in close, talking and giggling and stuff.
And so you got a pretty good look at them?
Yeah, I mean, him I saw better. Her hair was kind of down because she was looking up towards him, so her hair was kind of covering her face.
Okay. But you believe it was her?
Yeah, I mean, it looked similar. I mean, height-wise, skin color.
You said she changed her clothes?
I think so, yeah.
Can you tell me what she was wearing at that point?
Not really. I mean, it didn't look the same. I want to say a white top and, I don't know, maybe white pants also.
And they were okay with each other?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, nothing was out of the ordinary about it. Otherwise, I would have stopped them and questioned them.
Well, I guess that's what I'm saying. I mean, I know you can come and go when you want. I mean, but this is between 3 and 5 in the morning on a Saturday morning. So the doors usually get propped open, so you have issues with people. I would think if you're walking,
it was a problem.
If you're walking the hallways, I would think you're walking the hallways to look for just that kind of thing. I would almost think.
Yeah.
Okay. So what made you decide not to challenge them when they were walking down the hallways?
I don't normally challenge people in the hallways because if they've gotten into the building, especially because, like I said, in the past it was a problem. It hasn't been as much of a problem lately because the office has sent out in the newsletter that they are going to be a lot more harsher with the enforcement of that. First offense is a $50 fine. Second offense may lead up to termination.
That's leaving the doors open?
Wedging the doors open.
Okay, if they're caught.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, that's why they've got their cameras on everything now. Okay. So they half the time, I don't even catch people doing it, but the camera does.
Okay. So you didn't see a need to challenge or say?
Unless someone's doing something suspicious in the building, I assume that they got into the building legally or how they should.
I'm trying to understand my directions better, but the way you were describing that, they're walking towards you and you're walking towards them. Knowing where apartment 345 is, where she was, were they walking away from that or towards that?
Away from that.
They were walking away from 345. Yes. Would they have been walking towards the elevator?
They could have either turned and walked towards the elevator, or they could have continued out through the to go straight to the parking garage. I do not know which way they went, though.
But you're not sure if it's the third floor?
I'm pretty sure it's the third floor.
It was the third floor. Okay.
More than that, I almost can guarantee now that, yeah.
Okay.
And, again, I'm sorry, guys.
No, that's okay. Cause if it's not something that sticks in your mind, you know, you're not going to make a mental note. I understand that.
Yeah. They weren't doing anything really suspicious, and nothing felt off to me.
Detective Ferreira then pointed out some inconsistencies he noticed in Stephen's version of events. In his written statement, Stephen had said that after Sasha got into the building, he found her by her apartment, and now he was saying that she was on a different floor. Also, the surveillance video showed Stephen following Sasha around the building for almost an hour, something he also hadn't brought up to detectives.
We know you're on the fourth floor, but her, right? Where did you first see her when she went inside?
When I first saw her.
Well, I mean, your statement to us before was you went inside to go look for her, correct? Okay, where was the first place that you saw her when you found her?
Maybe the second or third floor.
Because your first statement, your written statement said that you found her by her apartment. Mm-hmm. That's what your statement says. So why did your statement say that?
You're confusing me.
I'm not trying to understand.
I'm nervous as hell right now because now you guys are basically accusing me of doing something.
No, sir. We're just trying to understand why we're getting the reaction we're getting, okay? That's it. Do we have to explain that? And we have an obligation to the family and to our superiors to be able to explain that. Because we say, well, I couldn't explain it. You understand. You've got to do your job.
Yeah, it's just okay. When the whole bad things happen to people panic, stuff. I know how that sounds, and I know what that leads to.
What does that lead to?
It leads to, next thing I know, I'm a suspect. You guys think I did something bad.
We're just trying to understand why.
I'm bothered by these questions.
Yeah. And we understand, you know, again, we're looking at your statement, your first written statement.
Yeah.
And I've seen you write reports. You write very detailed reports.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in this report,
on the spot, having to pick everything right from out of my head. I'm not very good on the spot.
It's not necessarily on the spot when they talk to you and you wrote a statement. It's just you didn't say.
Well, everything's going on. I don't know what's going on. I'm confused. I'm trying to remember everything that I can about the situation. But basically, to me, that's somewhat on the spot.
Okay.
Stephen.
Mm-hmm. Something happened at night. Something happened that night that we can't deny. We cannot deny that. I'm looking at you. Isn't this you?
Yep.
Okay. And where you guys at here?
That would be, that's the stairwell C that exits us on to Pasadena.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Why are you guys in the stairwell?
Because I was walking around with her.
Okay. So you were walking around with her?
Yeah.
Okay. You didn't tell us that?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't. I slipped my mind.
When we asked you, you said she came, she did not have the fob, so she could not get in.
Yep.
The attendant allowed her to go in. And you tell us, then you start doing your rounds, and you encounter her on the third floor.
That's on the first floor.
This is on the, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the problem that we have?
I can understand what the issue is here.
Okay. You're going to have to let it go. You're going to have to tell the truth.
I am telling you the truth.
This will bother you. This will eat at you. It will eat at you the rest of your life. That I can guarantee.
What
we can deal with the truth.
what will be of me for the rest of my life?
That you're not being truthful.
I'm being truthful with you.
Okay. You say that, but there's just so many discrepancies in your statement. Things that even day one didn't make a lot of sense to us.
Yeah, don't you think you should have allowed her to come with you too?
Right, okay. Shouldn't you have made sure that she was inside of her apartment?
Yeah, I should have.
But regardless of whether or not he felt like a suspect, Stephen admitted nothing. The next day, on October 23rd, police executed a search warrant on Stephen's apartment, where his phone was collected and analyzed. Of interest to detectives was an online search he had made from 5:13 a.m., the morning Sasha was killed, for how to defeat a digital lock, similar to the one on Sasha's door. They also retrieved the shoes Stephen said he had been wearing that night to compare them to footprints they had been able to glean from Sasha's bedroom. Stephen was arrested on October 31st and charged with first-degree murder, attempted sexual battery, and burglary. We'll get into Stephen's trial right after this quick break from today's sponsors. For a thoughtful gift that's perfect for anyone in your life, opt for a fragrance from Fragrance X. Perfume.com aims to provide you with the largest selection of perfume and cologne at the lowest prices. Save up to 80% on brand name perfumes like Dolce & Gabbana, Burberry, Calvin Klein, Hugo Boss, and hundreds more. Their discount fragrance selection consists of over 9,500 brands of perfume, cologne, body lotion, and aftershaves, including many discontinued perfumes and discontinued colognes. And don't worry, they guarantee that all of their products are original designer fragrances, all 100% authentic. Plus, Fragrance X offers free shipping and free returns. No wonder Fragrance X has millions of happy customers. This is the perfect holiday gift for him and her. And now, my listeners can get an extra 25% off when you go to perfume.com and use the code COURT25. That's perfume.com, P-E-R-F-U-M-E.com, offer code COURT25 to save an extra 25% on your fragrance purchase. Hurry, this is a limited time offer. This episode is also sponsored by Virtue Labs. Virtue Labs is a new hair care brand with the goal of giving everyone the best hair scientifically possible. 6 years ago, a group of bioscientists working in restorative medicine discovered an incredible new protein called alpha keratin 60KU, which has the power to completely transform your hair. Alpha keratin 60KU is a whole human protein that's identical to the keratin in your own hair, so it can resurface and fill in cracks from damage to change your hair's quality and appearance forever. And right now, you can only find it in Virtue Labs' line of shampoos, conditioners, and styling products. Not to mention, each formula was created to address specific issues like heat damage, frizz, or thinning hair. That means more bounce, more shine, more strength, and more life for your hair. You'll notice a difference after the very first wash. Believe me, I did. Ready to experience it? Listeners can now try Virtue at 10% off and get free shipping with the code COURT. Visit virtuelabs.com to place your order. It's time to start treating our hair with a little more humanity. It's time for Virtue. Stephen Duxbury, who was 33 years old at the time of his arrest, had been working at the security company for about 6 months. He was a United States Air Force veteran and attended Strayer University. On his LinkedIn profile, he described himself as a, quote, hardworking individual who always seeks new experiences in life to learn from. Stephen's trial started on November 14, 2017. He was being represented by Aaron Delgado and Chaney Mason. And if the name Chaney Mason sounds familiar to you, that's probably because he was one of Casey Anthony's defense attorneys, too. Assistant State's Attorney William Jay said in his opening statements that the evidence will show that Stephen Duxbury crushed Sasha Samsudine's larynx, killed her, and left her, quote, rolled up in a Tootsie Roll in her own comforter. He said Stephen's job at the Uptown Place Apartments was to patrol, write people up for leaving trash, and keep people safe. Jay warned the jury that Sasha would sometimes drink hard with male and female friends, and that she had relationships with other males, as the evidence from her bed would show. On the evening of October 16, 2015, Sasha went to a soccer game and then to several bars with her friend, Anthony Roper. Before they entered one bar, the Attic, Sasha wasn't feeling well. She thought she was going to throw up, but didn't. They went into the bar, but Sasha decided that she wasn't having fun, and so she left. Sometime around 1:30 a.m., Sasha was seen wandering alone, obviously impaired. He told the jury about Julia and Haley, who gave her a ride home in their Uber, and then tried to help her get into her apartment building. At some point, Stephen Duxbury came over and joined them. Sasha then sneaks in, and Julia and Haley leave after talking to Stephen for a couple more minutes. Jay told the jury that there's surveillance video from the apartment complex that will show that around 1:48 a.m., Stephen enters the same door as Sasha had and heads in the same direction as she did. At 2:05, Sasha can be seen looking for her apartment, with Stephen following her. At 2:25, they both go into the garage. Sasha can't find her car, so she goes to try the combination codes on the digital lock on her door. At 2:33 a.m., evidence shows that Sasha finally got into her apartment at that time. Around 5:03 a.m., Stephen enters the parking garage and leaves on a different floor at 5:13 a.m. During this time, Jay said, was when Stephen was searching online for how to defeat the digital lock on Sasha's door for 7 minutes. That evidence was found on his phone, and interestingly, an hour before the search warrant was served on his phone, Stephen did a factory reset on it. But whether Stephen was actually able to defeat the lock and open the door himself, or whether a drunken Sasha let the security guard inside, we'll never know, Jay said. He said that at 5:12 a.m., Sasha sent a text message that simply said, "Ben." She had been texting with an ex-boyfriend earlier in the evening, a man named Ben, whom she still slept with occasionally. Jay highlighted some of the evidence that the jury will hear that all points to Stephen, including footprints, fingerprints, and DNA. And he told the jury that in spite of this, Stephen was adamant that he never went inside Sasha's apartment. In their opening statements, defense attorney Aaron Delgado said that the reasonable doubt is the name of the puzzle we're putting together. He told the jury that a lot of the evidence is indisputable, but that it doesn't tell you the why or how. He said, for example, a fingerprint doesn't tell you anything other than at some point in time, someone touched that spot. And DNA could also mean a lot of different things. He said that Sasha had a very active social life and that her friends describe her as a heavy drinker. In fact, the medical examiner will confirm that her blood alcohol level was high that night, although the medical examiner won't be able to tell you a time of death, which is important due to the timeline. Delgado said there's no evidence that Stephen overrode the lock on Sasha's door. He said Stephen may have been searching how to open a lock to help another resident get in. We'll never know. But we do know that when the search was done, he was in the parking garage. He wasn't outside Sasha's door. He also said that the prosecution claims that Stephen was on camera taking out trash bags that contained evidence. But why would he do that, knowing where the surveillance cameras were located? Stephen became a suspect early on in the investigation, and police officers thought they saw bite marks on his arms. But you'll hear that it was really eczema. That's the kind of jumping to conclusions the officers made, he said. He told the jury that on December 28th, a bag was found in the Uptown Apartments by a groundskeeper. In the bag was Sasha's credit card, keys, and key fob to open the door. Police have no idea who dropped the bag there because Stephen was in jail already and had been since October 31st. Other parts of the reasonable doubt puzzle? There was an unmatched fingerprint on the cabinet where the cleaning supplies had been removed, other men's DNA on her sheets, and the fact that her DNA was not found on Stephen's clothes. A lot of the evidence only shows that Stephen was in the room, and he's not on trial for being in the room, Delgado said. One of Sasha's ex-boyfriends, Benjamin Roebuck, was one of the state's first witnesses. He said he and Sasha dated in college, where they went to the University of Florida together. Their relationship ended in 2008 or 2009, but they kept in touch through social media. Ben works retail at Apple, so is very knowledgeable about Apple phones and how they work. He said that on the night Sasha was killed, he and Sasha exchanged messages with each other. A screenshot of their conversation from his phone was displayed on the overhead for the jury. He sent her an iMessage at 1:23 a.m., telling her to check her Snapchat. The message was green in color, meaning that she may have had her device turned off or wasn't signed into her Apple account, and so it was sent as a text message and not an iMessage. At 5:12 a.m., he got a message from her that just read, "Ben." At 5:28 and 5:53, he messaged her back. These messages were blue, meaning that they went through as an iMessage, which likely meant that one of her devices was signed in to her Apple account. These could have been from her cell phone or from her iPad. One of the texts he sent read, "Sasha, call me." And another one read, "Sasha, are you alive?"
So what did you mean by that text at 6:04?
That text was something that, you know, when you go out drinking and get really drunk and maybe black out, you know, you have, you know, what I would say, you know, I died last night. Like, I got so drunk that I was passed out and didn't remember what happened. That's what I would consider. That's what I was referencing in that text.
Did you ever go over to her place that night of October 16th in the early morning hours of October 17th?
No, I did not.
Did you remain where you were in Thornton Park at that 1410 Washington Street?
I did.
What did you do with the rest of your day once you all woke up over there at 1410 Washington?
I actually had a wedding to go to the next day, so I returned back home and started preparing to drive to the wedding.
Ben said as he was driving to the wedding, his brother called him and told him that Sasha was dead.
What did you do after you learned of the news?
I mean, I cried for a while. I pulled over the car and stopped to think about what I was just told. I then, you know, after thinking about it, I let my friend continue driving for me because I didn't feel like I could continue driving. So we continued on to the wedding for my friends, and I just had a rough night for the rest of the evening. But yeah.
Okay. Now, at some point, did you talk to the police?
Yes.
And when was that?
It's been a long time. I'm not sure exactly when it was. You know, I tried to go in when I heard that people were kind of giving statements, and so I presented myself as a, you know, somebody that knew her.
So did you seek them out, or did they seek you out?
I believe I seeked them out.
Okay.
He said he also gave them a DNA sample. On cross-examination, Delgado brought up Sasha's use of the dating app Tinder and asked Ben if he knew that Sasha used that app, and he said yes, that she occasionally met people on Tinder. When asked if she would drink heavily, he said sometimes, and admitted that her friends drink a lot. He said the last time he was at her place was several months before she passed away, that he had spent the night there. He told Delgado that he didn't have her access code, nor had he ever used it. Two other men who had relationships with Sasha in the months prior to her death also testified. Joshua Cohen said that he met Sasha on Tinder in the spring of 2015, months before she died. He told the court that their relationship had fizzled out prior to her death. He had never been to her apartment, but had spent the night at her old apartment. He described their relationship as, quote, late-night booty calls around August and September, and said that they would get together and drink after the bars had closed. On cross-examination, Joshua said that Sasha was a heavy drinker who could hold her liquor. He said they both lived by the work hard, play hard mindset. The last time he got a late night phone call from her was in mid-September. When asked if Sasha was into rough sex, he said yes. When asked if she had ever asked him to choke her, he said he couldn't recall, but did recall her biting him. He recalled that one time he had squeezed her too hard and had left a mark, and that they had laughed about it later. He told Delgado that police never asked for or looked through his phone, and he didn't remember them asking for fingerprints, although he did submit his DNA. On the weekend Sasha died, he said he was at his apartment about a mile away. A man named Taylor Unsinger said that he had a romantic relationship with Sasha between 2013 and March 2015, but said he was at home asleep at the time of the murder. He had submitted his DNA to the police. Julia Goff testified about her encounter with Sasha on the night she died. She said that after Sasha had gotten into the building and before she and Haley went home, they stood outside talking to Stephen for a few additional minutes. She said Stephen told them that he had seen Sasha before and that he had seen her intoxicated like that before too. And remember, this contradicts what Stephen told the police, that he had never seen Sasha before that night. Clayton Bezerra was a tenant in the Uptown Place Apartments who was up doing laundry in the early morning hours of October 17th. He said he saw the security guard following Sasha around, but that he didn't think anything was unusual. He said after he finished doing his laundry, he walked around a little to see if she was okay and to make sure she hadn't fallen down. Stephen Patrick, Stephen's boss at Vital Security Company, testified that the security company had strict overtime policies and that Stephen was not supposed to stay on site past the end of his shift without telling his supervisor and getting permission. He didn't hear from Stephen on the night Sasha was killed, even though he stayed 30 minutes after his shift was over. This was out of character for him, Patrick said. He told the court that he received a text message from Stephen on the night of October 17th, saying that the Orlando police were at the building, conducting a welfare check. A later text said that he had overheard the police saying that they had found her and that he had a, quote, bad feeling about this. When he first spoke with Stephen about what had happened, they met at the Uptown Place Apartments. Stephen had told him about seeing Sasha outside the building on the night of October 16th and how he left her outside her apartment door on the third floor. He said he later saw her again and that she was heavily intoxicated, and there was also a male with her who had curly, shaggy, dirty blonde hair. Patrick said he confronted Stephen about leaving her at her door, and Stephen said that he hadn't thought about it that way and that he cried when he was explaining that he was told he was the last person who had seen her alive. Patrick said there was nothing in Stephen's report that referenced trash being left in the hallway as he normally did. He didn't receive any reports about trash that night. Dr. Gary Utz, the deputy chief medical examiner in Orlando, performed the autopsy on Sasha. He said the manner of death was homicide and that strangulation, particularly manual strangulation, was the cause. He said there were numerous signs of blunt force trauma to Sasha's head and that her body smelled like cleaning solution. He noted that there were bleach-type stains found on her comforter. He said due to the cleaning liquids that had been poured on her, he couldn't identify any rape-related injuries on her body, but couldn't rule it out. She did have injuries on her thighs that could be consistent with having sex with someone who had a utility belt on. That is one possibility, he said. As far as the time of death, he said he wasn't able to pinpoint when she died. He said there were signs that whoever killed Sasha wrapped both hands around Sasha's neck and that the strangulation was among the most severe he had ever seen. The investigators testified next. Officer Andy Tran with the Orlando Police Department said that Stephen was acting a little strange while officers searched Sasha's apartment.
Can you describe the defendant's behavior while you were back at the door of the apartment with just him again?
I would say that it's a little nervous.
And what did you actually observe that makes you draw that opinion?
A pacing, swaying back and forth, kind of looking down the hallway when no one is in the hallway with us.
Okay.
Officer Kyle Medvitz described finding Sasha's body.
when we left the bathroom going into the bedroom, I was the first one coming out. And the comforter on the bed was, it was ruffled. It wasn't neatly made. It was kind of in a pile. And when I was looking at that comforter, I saw black hair sticking out of the comforter. And then as I looked further, there was a hand. And the hand was positioned in a way that, to me, it's not really natural if someone was just sleeping. Like,
okay,
if you're sleeping.
What did you see before you opine about it? What? How did the hand look? Can you show us?
From what I remember, it was kind of closed like this. If I'm sleeping, my hands are relaxed. Or
okay, so it's not how you think your hands sleep because you're not awake when you sleep.
Correct.
Okay. So, what do you do or say?
I basically made everyone aware of what I observed.
Okay, tell us what you said.
I said, fuck.
Cassandra Baumgartner with the Orlando CSI unit went over the evidence found at the scene, including the nightstand from which Stephen's fingerprints were later recovered, shoe prints that were found on the floor, some of them a match to Stephen's shoes, and the comforter that Sasha had been wrapped in. It was discolored, and prosecutors contend that the discoloration was from the cleaning liquids that the killer had used in an attempt to destroy evidence. Baumgartner testified that she also tried to get DNA and fingerprints off of a bottle of cleaning solution, but that those were inconclusive. On cross-examination, she said that she took pictures of Stephen at the scene and that he was cooperative. She agreed that he had no scratches or other wounds on his face or neck. Diane McConaughey, a shoe impression specialist from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, or FDLE, said that she tested a pair of Stephen's Skechers to see if they matched the shoe prints found in Sasha's apartment. She overlaid them and discovered that they were indeed a match. Prosecutors showed one of the daily reports that Stephen would typically email to his boss at the end of his shift. The report contained photos of trash left by people's doors, which goes against his statement that it was normal for him to take the trash out. A digital forensics examiner also testified that Stephen had reset his phone an hour before the search warrant was served on it. But on cross-examination, Delgado noted that Stephen had recently updated his Android phone and that he could have been trying to wipe his phone so he could go back to how it was prior to the update. Howard Kuhn, a fingerprint expert, confirmed that two fingerprints from Stephen were clear matches to prints found in Sasha's apartment, one on her nightstand and the other on the toilet lid. DNA evidence was presented next. Edgar Perez, a DNA expert with the FDLE, collected a DNA profile from Stephen, as well as many of Sasha's ex-boyfriends. He said he took swabs from Sasha's left and right breasts and found a partial DNA profile that was foreign to Sasha. And in fact, that partial profile matched that of Stephen Duxbury. The prosecution played the interviews investigators had with Stephen for the jury, and then they rested. Chaney Mason moved for a judgment of acquittal, saying that there was no evidence of a burglary, no evidence of rape or sexual battery, and no evidence that Stephen committed murder. Judge Munyon denied the judgment. Stephen chose to not testify at his trial, and the defense didn't call any witnesses to the stand. They instead rested, saying that the state hadn't proved their case. Prosecutor William Jay said the evidence shows that Stephen did nothing but lie. He replayed the surveillance video and pointed out that Stephen's last key card swipe was at 5:05 a.m., and then we don't see him on surveillance video again until 6:38 a.m., when he's taking out someone's trash. Jay told the jury that during that time period is when he raped and murdered Sasha. He reminded them that because she was intoxicated, she was unable to consent to sex. He said even if she invited him in and said, "Gee, Mr. Security Guard, thanks for helping me get in. What can I do to repay you?" And they had sex and she died, That's still felony murder. With the amount of violence inflicted on her, it's absurd to think that she would consent, he said. In his closing arguments, Aaron Delgado told the court that Sasha's death was a terrible tragedy, but it would be an equally terrible tragedy to ruin another life today. He said that the Skechers prosecutors say matched the shoe prints at the crime scene don't even fit Steven, and that when you see the surveillance video, you can see that he's wearing Nikes and not Skechers. He told the jury that Steven was not throwing out evidence in those trash bags and blamed the investigators for not securing and searching the building's dumpsters. He asked the jury to set aside evidence that Steven lied about having never been inside Sasha's apartment, saying that he isn't on trial for whether he lied or not. If Mr. Duxbury attacked her, where's the evidence on him? Where's the evidence on her? Nothing, he said. He said they should instead be focusing on the inconclusive prints that were found on the bathroom cabinet, since that's where the cleaning supplies likely came from. He said that even with a blood alcohol level of higher than 0.2 at her death, Sasha may not have been all that drunk, saying that there was no proof that she was too drunk to give consent. And as for Steven calling her drunk, Delgado said that was just an expression. The jury was then sent out to deliberate. In order for the jury to find Steven guilty of first-degree murder, they would have to decide that Steven either committed premeditated murder or felony murder, which would mean that the murder happened during the commission of a felony, like sexual battery or burglary in this case. Alternatively, they could find him guilty of second-degree murder, which wouldn't have to have been premeditated or during the commission of a felony, or they could find him guilty of manslaughter. And as for the sexual battery count, the jury instructions included a consideration of alcohol, meaning that if they found that she was drunk, that would remove her ability to consent to sex with Steven. The jury deliberated for about 4 hours before reaching their verdict.
Verdict as to count one. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of first-degree murder as charged in the indictment, and the killing was premeditated murder and felony murder. Verdict is to count two. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of attempted sexual battery with physical force as charged in the indictment. Verdict is to count three. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of burglary of a dwelling with an assault or battery as charged in the indictment. So say we all, dated at Orlando, Orange County, Florida, on this 21st day of November, 2017, signed by the foreperson.
Guilty on all counts. Before Steven was sentenced, Sasha's mom spoke about the loss of her daughter, and she also spoke about how her heart goes out to Steven's mother as well.
It took me 18 months to feel my body was in shock. It took me 18 months before I could even feel any emotion about what happened. And when I started to cry, it was bucketfuls of tears, I think, how much tears I shed. I cried today because justice was served. But I also cried because there's a mother in this courtroom that is losing her son to the crime that he committed. I don't fault her for it. And many times I wanted to go and said, look, I'm really sorry what you're going through. I don't know that it was the most appropriate thing to do. But I really, truly feel the pain she's going through because that's who I am. So today, I'd like to thank you and thank everyone who came here to support me.
Sasha's father also spoke. He started by pointing to a photo of Sasha and saying, that's my baby.
You know, they say, life is not made up of the number of breaths you take. Life is made up of the number of moments that take your breath away. Boy, she took my breath away millions of times. Millions of times. And she will continue doing so. We have two children. I know I speak of her in present tense, but I always will, because physically she might be gone, but her memories, they ain't gonna die. She's always gonna be among us. She had friends we didn't even know about. She touched the lives of so many people. She was a volunteer. She was one heck of a student. She was ambitious. Whatever she did, she gave her all. That's all you can ask of someone. She loved unconditionally, in the true sense of the word. And even though she was only around for 27 years, she lived a pretty darn full life. She achieved so much, and I'm proud of what she did.
Stephen Duxbury, the security guard who was supposed to be a symbol of help and safety, and who was supposed to look after the residents in the Uptown Place apartments, was sentenced to life in prison. And that's all for today's episode. I'd love to know what you think about this case. Do you think Stephen was guilty of all counts? What do you make of the defense not putting on a case? And what did you think of the defense trying to bring up Sasha's personal dating life in their cross-examinations? Let me know by joining our Court Junkie discussion group on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at Court Junkie Pod, on Instagram at Court Junkie, or you can email me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. A special thank you to Jane Lee for helping me research this case. And thank you to Lady Justice 2188 on YouTube. If you aren't already subscribed to her channel, you absolutely should be, especially since I'm guessing you'd like to follow trials. That's Lady Justice 2188 on YouTube. Also, thank you again to Virtue Labs. As a reminder, Virtue Labs is a new hair care brand with the goal of giving everyone the best hair scientifically possible via an incredible new protein, alpha-keratin 60KU. Alpha-keratin 60KU is identical to the keratin in your own hair and has the power to resurface and fill in cracks from damage, meaning more bounce, more shine, and more life for your hair. And now, you can get it exclusively in Virtue Labs' line of shampoos, conditioners, and styling products. Ready to experience it? Just visit virtuelabs.com and use the code COURT to try Virtue at 10% off plus free shipping. And a couple of big announcements before I go. This will be my last show of the year until the next release on January 8th. Court Junkie is taking a little break over the holidays to work on the next season of episodes, but we'll be back and ready to go by then. And I also want to let you know of a big announcement in my personal life that will also be affecting the show releases. And that is that I am expecting my first child. So as a result of this exciting news for myself and my family, I'll be releasing episodes bi-weekly beginning after the new year. I thank you all for your patience, and I'm looking forward to putting out high-quality, well-researched shows for next year. But instead of weekly, they will now be on a bi-weekly schedule, at least for this next season of episodes. And lastly, if you'd like to hear these Court Junkie episodes early and ad-free, please consider donating as little as $1 a month to this podcast. Just go to courtjunkie.com/support. Thanks for listening. Have a great holiday. Until next time.